couldn't either. Let's go to Psalm 27. Well, the whole psalm is great, but I just want to go to the last verse. Wait on the Lord, and be of good courage, and he shall strengthen thine heart. Wait, I say, on the Lord. Waiting is the one thing that the flesh can't do, or doesn't want to do, or above all costs doesn't want to. Because to wait doesn't mean just hang around. To wait means to stay at peace. You can't wait if you're not at peace. And so the waiting on the Lord, there are probably more scriptures about waiting on the Lord than almost any other thing in the script in the Bible. Let's go to Isaiah 45, maybe, or 43, something.
Yeah, this is, I just happened to see one of the scriptures at the beginning where it talks about, you know, wanting the Lord to keep the enemies from eating up his flesh.
Yeah.
It's like, it's pretty hard to wait without God actually being there to help you do it.
And the main thing, the main enemy that's wants to destroy, wants to keep you from this, is the flesh, our flesh, including our mind. We don't want to wait.
Where are we going, Isaiah?
I'm not sure yet. I think it's Isaiah 40. Well, let's this is a good one. Let's read for a while in verse 1. We may skip some, but comfort ye my people, saith your God. Speak comfortably to Jerusalem and cry unto her that her warfare is accomplished, that her iniquity is pardoned. For she hath received of the Lord's hand double for all her sins. The voice of him that crieth in the wilderness, prepare ye the way of the Lord, make straight in the desert a highway for our God. Every valley shall be exalted, and every mountain and hill shall be made low. The crooked places shall be made straight, and the rough places plain. Now, it's not talking about a bulldozer going through ahead of you. It's talking about the high places of your mind being made straight or low, and the low places being made even or level, and the crooked places being made straight. The only way that can happen is for you to ignore them. The enemy of there is no greater enemy of God on the face of the earth than your mind and my mind. We love to think that we're the friend of God, that we want to do what God wants us to do, but there's no possibility of that happening. And so we've talked many times about how the one thing that can't happen as long as your mind is being exercised is peace. Your mind is always 666. It can never reach 7. It can never reach peace until it's ignored. Then peace becomes as natural as breathing, and waiting becomes as easy as breathing. But every one of us should be exhorting each other to this mystery, to this idea that the only answer is waiting on Him. Let's continue reading. Verse 6, the voice said, cry. And he said, what shall I cry? All flesh is as grass, and all the goodliness thereof is as the flower of the grass, or flower of the field. The grass withereth, the flower fadeth, because the Spirit of the Lord bloweth upon it. Surely this people is grass. Your mind always comes up with an idea. Anything but waiting on God. Your mind can't conceive that all flesh and the goodliness thereof is nothing. Let's continue. O Zion that bringest good tidings, get thee up into the high mountain. O Jerusalem that bringest good tidings, lift up thy voice and strength, lift it up. Be not afraid, say unto the cities of Judah, behold your God. Behold, the Lord will come with a strong hand, his arm shall rule for him. Behold, his reward is with him, and his work before him. Actually, that says what it says. It says his work is assured, or the end result of his work is assured. He shall feed his flock like a shepherd. He shall gather the lambs with his arms and carry them in his bosom, and shall gently lead those that are with young. Let's keep reading. I want to get down to the end of it. Who hath measured the waters in the hollow of his hand, and meted out heaven with the span, and comprehended the dust of the earth in a measure, and weighed the mountains and scales and the hills in a balance? Who hath directed the Spirit of the Lord, or who, being his counselor, hath taught him? With whom took he counsel, and who instructed him, and taught him in the path of judgment, and taught him knowledge, and showed to him the way of understanding? Behold, the nations are as a drop of a bucket, and are counted as the small dust of the balance. Behold, he taketh up the isles as a very little thing. Lebanon is not sufficient to burn, nor the beasts thereof sufficient for a burnt offering. All nations before him are as nothing, and they are counted to him less than nothing and vanity. Unto whom will you liken God? Of what likeness will you compare with him? The workman melteth a graven image, and the goldsmith spreadeth it over with gold and casteth it. and casteth silver chains. He that is so impoverished that he hath no oblations chooseth a tree that will not rot, and he seeketh unto him a cunning workman to prepare a graven image that shall not be moved. Have you not known? Have you not heard? Hath it not been told you from the beginning? Have you not understood from the foundation of the earth? It is he that sitteth upon the circle of the earth, and the inhabitants thereof are as grasshoppers, that stretcheth out the heavens as a curtain, and spreadeth them out as a tent to dwell in, that bringeth the princes to nothing, that maketh the judges of the earth as vanity. They shall not be planted, they shall not be sown, their stock shall not take root in the earth, and he shall also blow upon them, and they shall wither, and the whirlwind shall take them away as stubble. Now, everything we've read in this psalm, the first words are comfort, comfort, comfort. And you hear that comfort, and sounds great. You want that comfort. And how long does it last? It lasts till some issue comes up that you have perceived with your senses, and your mind has a response to it, and then comfort is meaningless because you've got to solve the issue before you. Now, what is the spiritual man that hears the word comfort? He stays in that position no matter what comes to him. And let's go down to verse 28. Hast thou not known? Hast thou not heard that the everlasting God, the Lord, is the creator of the ends of the earth, fainteth not, neither is weary? There's no searching of his understanding. He giveth power to the faint, and to them that have no might he increaseth strength. Even the youth shall faint and be weary, and the young men shall utterly fail. But they that wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings as eagles. They shall run and not be weary, and they shall walk and not faint. How do you do that? How do you wait on God? Anybody?
See through all those things and see what's real. He ends up being the last real thing that's there. All the other stuff, like it says, chaff.
What's the opposite of waiting? And how do you know when you shall wait?
Exerting my own strength. Doing
something. Deciding for yourself of something that you should do is the opposite of waiting. We talked yesterday about if you have choices. Choice one, choice two, choice three, choice four. Which is behind which curtain? Though if you're ever in that position, your only response is to wait. If there's two choices, you can do this or this, the only response is to wait. Let's read what we did yesterday in Numbers 9. And see it in a context of waiting. Again, now this is the instructions to Israel as they were coming out of Egypt. And their first journey was through the wilderness. starting in verse 15. Well, it wasn't until they had finished all making all the pieces of the temple, the tabernacle in the wilderness. Verse 15, and on the day that the tabernacle was reared up, the cloud covered the tabernacle, namely the tent of the testimony. And at evening there was upon the tabernacle, as it were, the appearance of fire until morning. And so it was always. The cloud covered it by day, and the appearance of fire by night. When the cloud was taken up from the tabernacle, then after that the children of Israel journeyed. And in the place where the cloud abode, there the children of Israel pitched their tents. At the commandment of the Lord, the children of Israel journeyed, and at the commandment of the Lord they pitched. As long as the cloud abode on their tabernacles, they rested in their tents. When the cloud tarried long upon the tabernacle, many days, then the children of Israel kept the charge of the Lord and journeyed not. And so it was, when the cloud was a few days upon the tabernacle, according to the commandment of the Lord, they abode in their tents, and according to the commandment of the Lord, they journeyed. And so it was, when the cloud abode from evening until morning, and that the cloud was taken up in the morning, then they journeyed, whether it was by day or by night. When the cloud was taken up, they journeyed. Or whether it were 2 days, or a month, or a year, that the cloud tarried upon the tabernacle, remaining thereon, the children of Israel abode in their tents and journeyed not. And as you could add one more there, 39 years. For they abode in their tents in Kadesh Barnea for 39 years. They moved not. Now, what's the opposite of not abiding? Obviously, it's abiding in their tents is waiting on God.
Now, it's neat that they talk about rest. You know, they're abiding in their tents, they're resting.
They're rest. They're rest. They're rest. And that's the only way that God can teach you to wait. When you have more than one option, you rest in the tent. Mind always says you have many options, but even if it has only down to two, you wait. Because that's the way that you're transfigured by the renewing of your mind. Everything in you says, I can't wait. Now, the cloud, it says at the start, it was in the day or the night, the cloud in the daytime and the fire at night. But later on it says whether it was in the day or the night, when the cloud was down, they moved. They couldn't even see the cloud at night. So how'd they know the cloud was down?
Well, there was, I think it was like one cloud, right? And at night it was...
At night it looked like fire.
Yeah.
No, that's not what it says. When the cloud tarried long upon the tabernacle, many days, in verse 19, then the children of Israel kept the charge of the Lord and journeyed not. And so it was, when the cloud was a few days upon the tabernacle, according to the command of the Lord, they abode in their tents. According to the command of the Lord, they journeyed. And so it was, when the cloud abode from evening until morning, that the cloud was taken up in the morning, then they journeyed. Whether it was by day or by night, the cloud was taken up, they journeyed. Whether it were 2 days or a month or a year that the cloud tarried. So it's the cloud is the operative issue day or night. For yeah. 1 day, for 1 month.
Yeah, if they had to travel at night, then it was obviously had to be able to see it. So, you know.
I know, but the cloud was the instruction.
Yeah, they'll be looking at it.
Well, in 16 it says it was fiery at night.
I understand. But what I'm saying is, in verse 22, whether the cloud remained 2 days or a month or a year, the cloud tarried upon the tabernacle, remaining thereon, the children of Israel. The point is, the cloud didn't automatically appear. I mean, the fire didn't appear at night unless the cloud was taken up. That's the whole point of this. And my question is, how did they see the cloud at night?
Well, yeah, that's, I guess, that if it says that the cloud wasn't visible.
Well, the impression is, the cloud was in the day, the guidance and fire was at night.
Yeah.
But you can't see the cloud at night, especially if, let's assume it was a new moon, or no, moon. The point of it is, the cloud is the operative. And to me, you know, we've taught for years that the cloud meant there was more than one option. As long as you have more than one option, you wait. And that's the way the mind, you're transfigured by the renewing of your mind. Because that's, then you're proving what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. You're putting Christ in you to his test. Remember it says, you are they that have continued with me in my temptation, not yours. You got to understand, his temptation has no home in human nature. So his temptation comes after your temptation is over. In other words, you've seen your death. You know your death. You can't see your death and know your death as long as you're using your senses to make decisions. Does that make sense to anybody?
Yeah. I mean, what gets me is, like, if they're supposed to be at rest in their tents, they can't be like pacing back and forth wishing that God would like hurry up and do something. You know, it's like
they're not at rest.
Yeah, and it's like, for one thing, they didn't even know what the options were. You know, should we go that way or that way?
Right,
like,
because
God knew where he was going.
The definition for me of the wilderness is the place where there are no options. From God's standpoint.
Yeah, you're completely dependent on that presence of God.
And so what we talked about yesterday is still there. If that cloud is down for us in any way, and the only way the cloud is down is if there's more than one option and something we think we should do. Otherwise, you weigh in the balance. Okay, this is option number one, this is door number one, this is door number two, and this is door number three. And which was one is going to benefit me the most? That's the one I choose. That's probably not the one that God would choose, and so you wait.
Yeah, I was thinking better, you know, usually it's some option you didn't even know was there. God will take you in off the wall, you know, direction that you would never have come up with in the first place.
But this is the hardest thing there is for you to do, to wait. It sounds nice. But there's no renewal of your mind unless you're waiting. Because if you're not, you're using your mind.
Yeah, it sounds boring to my flesh to wait.
Right. This is why it says, be you transfigured by the renewing of your mind. And your mind is renewed in waiting and not exercising the powers that you have by your senses. This is the instructions in Numbers 9. We saw yesterday in 1 Corinthians 10, it says that everything that happened to them happened for our benefit so we could see. Now, we don't have to go anywhere because that mystery of the kingdom of God is already within us. The only journey we have is this thing of no longer paying the slightest bit of attention to our senses. That we instead are waiting on God. Waiting for what? Waiting to do what? Waiting for the next move of anything. Let's look at some more waitings. Anybody have any more response to that?
Just the thinking that the whole journey was about getting to the promised land, not about anybody's,
right,
you know, life.
And that's still the same only journey we have. You can say, well, I'm, you know, what is the, God says my mind is renewed, so my mind is renewed. I don't have to do anything except live. No. The bride has to make herself ready. And I promise you,
where are we going?
I don't know yet. Oh. Let's go to Psalm 62. There's more about waiting in Psalms than there is in any other book of the Bible. John, would you read 1 through 5, or 1 through 7? 1 through 8, excuse me.
Okay, let's see. To the chief musician?
No, Psalm 62. Verse 1.
Oh, this just has the intro there. Truly my soul waiteth upon God. From him cometh my salvation. He only is my rock and my salvation. He is my defense. I shall not be greatly moved. How long shall you imagine mischief against a man? You shall be slain, all of you. As a bowing wall shall you be, and as a tottering fence. They only consult to cast him down from his excellency. They delight in lies. They bless with their mouth, but they curse inwardly. Selah. My soul, wait thou only upon God, for my expectation is from him. He only is my rock and my salvation. He is my defense. I shall not be moved. You want me to keep going?
That's fine. Now, again, wait only on God. Now, how do you know you're waiting on God? How do you know you're not waiting on something else?
Well, you're waiting on God if you're not waiting for something to happen. You know, otherwise, you're waiting for this or that. I mean, that's pretty...
Well, you're waiting from what we just read in Numbers. We're waiting for the cloud to be raised. And in my world, this is, maybe it's different in yours, but in my world, it always has to do with having more than one option. And if there's more than one option, then at least this is what, I've overridden it many times, but I know better now. If there's more than one option, the only thing I can do is wait. As John said earlier, the odds are it had what I'm going to be doing, if anything, has nothing to do with either one of those options. But the bottom line is, how do you know when to wait? And the only way I know when to wait, or when I should wait, it's better stated, is if there's something that needs more, that's in front of me that has more than one option. If there's only one, the course is clear. There's nothing. Then I can do that as unto the Lord. But if I have to use my mind to choose, then I'm not doing it as unto the Lord. I'm doing it as unto my best judgment. Does that make sense to anybody? There are many examples in my life, but, you know, the first example was the day of my conversion, and I don't want to bore you more with this, but I had probably $2,000 or $3,000 in my pocket. That's how I always carried about that much money with me. The credit cards were not an issue back then. So, and I knew I had to walk away. I walked away from everything, but I had enough money that I lived in the Executive Inn until that money ran out. And then I was homeless under the bridge. And I had, here was the great deal from my perspective. To me, it was no option. If I had money, and I didn't have to go. I wanted to be near the place where the television station was because I'd volunteered there, blah, blah, blah. And so I moved into the Executive Inn. It was close walking distance. When the money ran out, they asked me to move, to leave. There was no option. And so I just started walking. I ended up in the on the Mockingbird Bridge going across the Trinity. And there I stayed. There was not, I was ready, I would die there. That's what I told God, I would believe, I did it, I would die there. That's what he wanted me. And then those drunks started talking, and I said, God, is this what you want for me? And then I heard that first thing that I call God stuff about. But you've got to come to a place where, because to make decisions is as natural as breathing. You do it so automatically, you don't even think you're doing it. And to make a decision, you have to use that which God says is cursed. And so the test of discipleship, other than continuing with him is him in his test, is this idea of waiting. Only on him. And it'll happen over and over and over. You'll have all kinds of advice. But if anybody gives you advice other than waiting on God, shoot them. Not literally. Just getting another person's ideas from their mind about what you should do. Wait. That's what you should do. And be at peace. And if your mind isn't at peace, you confess it as sin. And then you're at peace. If it still doesn't, confess it as sin again. Until you finally understand that your mind is sin personified. Well, not my mind. My mind isn't sin. For I have a mind of Christ. Christ is an empty mind. Now, this is the most difficult thing that anybody could tell you about discipleship. To wait on him. But it is the singular, most important thing until waiting on him becomes as automatic as breathing. Amen.
You know, I was thinking of them resting in their tents again. And it's like the only way you know you can rest in your tent is to know that God is present with you. And that's what the cloud did. You know, it was like God said, I'm going to be with you. And that was like the distinctive of Israel. You know, it's like all the other people had gods who were like out there somewhere in a statue or something like that.
And it's again, you can only do this when you've come to the place where you've said, Father, I am yours without condition. You can accept Jesus as your personal Savior. For the rest of your life, you're living in the world, doing world stuff, but you know your sin is forgiven, and that's great. But for disciples, you've got to get from the world to the promise. journey is through your own mind. And that mind has to eventually be emptied, so it is the mind of Christ. All right?
You've gone into your rollover minutes, haven't we?
Huh?
You've gone into your rollover minutes.
We didn't start till 10 minutes, too.
Really?
All right. No, we started 5 minutes. Excuse me, I didn't say it right. We are 5 minutes overgrown.